You're listening to the Bitcoin.com podcast. Our guest today is Anthony Ray, but you'll know him as Sir Mix-a-Lot. This episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Earlier this year, you may recall that more than 100 Twitter users had their accounts hacked into, their passwords, email addresses, and even phone numbers. They were all taken from high-profile individuals and even prominent crypto account holders such as Binance, Coinbase, Gemini, Ripple, and many more. And it's not just Twitter. Facebook, eBay, Uber, Adobe, and even Yahoo has leaked data such as passwords, credit card info, and even driver's licenses belonging to billions of users. Look, if someone can hack Joe Biden's account, just imagine how easy it would be for them to hack you. That's why I use ExpressVPN to safeguard my personal data online. ExpressVPN is an app that funnels your data through a secure encrypted tunnel so that no matter what device you use, you can have peace of mind every time you use the internet. The app even connects with just one click. It's lightning fast, and the best part is it works on up to 5 devices simultaneously, so you and your whole family can stay connected. If a breach can happen to powerful individuals, it can happen to you. Protect yourself with ExpressVPN, the VPN rated number 1 by CNET, Wired, and countless others. And if you visit expressvpn.com/Bitcoin right now, you can arm yourself with an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. That's expressvpn.com/Bitcoin. Visit expressvpn.com/Bitcoin to learn more. I'm your host, Dustin Plantholt. Join us as we dive into the world of economics, politics, tech, Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency. For even more crypto-related news, sign up at news.bitcoin.com or follow us on Twitter at Bitcoin.com. Now let's bring on our guest. Welcome to the Bitcoin.com podcast.
What's going on, man? I know you stole my wallet, so I'm here to get it back.
Well, look, I'm not giving it back to you. That's just not happening. But what I will say is you're 57, man, and you look fantastic. I mean, how do you not age?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't drink, I don't smoke, but I was eating bad until this COVID thing started, and I decided, which is kind of weird. Most people gained weight during this COVID thing. I actually lost so far 28 pounds. So wow. I got a long way to go. I got to get 50 of them off of me, man. I just made up my mind I'm going to do it. But I don't really go crazy taking care of myself, although I have a full weight room outside that I use about once a week.
So tell me, like, in terms of food, like, what is
I'm a bit of a poser.
What are you eating these days? I mean, you look great. I mean, you're like the only the man can be the man, and you're the man.
Oh, if I stood up, you would not say that. You'd be like, stop.
This is you just bragging. I mean, for the people that can't see him, I'm telling you, the guy's a model.
Yeah, just the remnants of my past will show if I stand up right now. But nah, man, I stopped eating a bunch of carbs, honestly. That's really it. I started monitoring my blood sugar, blood pressure, and all of a sudden, when you start monitoring that, it becomes it's like a video game. At some point, you start competing with yourself.
Wow.
And every morning, you're like, oh, cool.
Every day. Now, is every day for you like just as exciting as the day before? I mean, you're Sir Mix-a-Lot. That's quite a big name to live up to.
But I love life. Most people, the only thing they think I just run around talking about butts all day. And I'm right here. I'm sitting in my studio. I come in here. I work every day. I mean, full studio. This is not a home studio. I got a $100,000 Avid S6 over here. I got the new Mac Pro. I got full Pro Tools, dual monitors. I'm serious. So I've been doing that from day one. It was really electronics that got me into music, not the other way around.
Now, I will tell you, back to that song, I like big butts. So I was bowling with my kids. A song came on. The whole place erupted. You did that. I mean, this was just pre-COVID. I mean, so many years later that it's still left an impact. And now the new generation of kids, they're also hearing it. What's it been like for you?
It's been an interesting ride because when I wrote that song in 1991, I came off of a platinum LP and a second one sold like 750. So I thought I was going down, you know, platinum down to 750. I'm like, oh no, well, let me try this. But the song was not, it's not about butts, right? So it is now.
What are you kidding now, me? This whole time, I was a believer. I thought it was about butts.
Well, no, really, if you listen to the lyrics, there's a reason I'm picking on Cosmo. There's a reason I mentioned red beans and rice. The whole thing was really about, in that era now, remember, we're talking 30 years ago.
Right.
The women of color, when you saw them in TV shows, other than Felicia Rashad, right, which was the Cosby thing,
and
Diane Carroll in the early, in the late 70s, early 80s, but I hate to say it, but they were usually either a streetwise hooker on the new Law and Order, which was new then, or they played, you know, the usually heavyset maid that gave the spoiled rich white family good advice. And it was really condescending. So
yeah, that's not a positive
light.
Baby
got back with kind of a, yeah, it's not. And it was kind of a wink, wink, joke, a poke at the establishment. It was never meant to be big. And when Rick Rubin heard it, he's like, no, this is your single. I'm like, really? I'm gonna piss a lot of people off. He said, that's the point.
I mean, what's that
and,
like,
it worked for a while. And then, you know,
I mean, what's it?
Scary.
It has to be. I mean, I know you know this. There are so many artists out there around the world that could only dream of what you've been able to do and a song that you've been able to create, an image, like what you've been able to accomplish seemed impossible, but it wasn't impossible. How'd you do it?
You know, I wish I could say, yeah, you know what? I had this theory and no, that this is... Keep in mind, I came off of a platinum and I thought that was the pinnacle. So I said, I've already seen the mountaintop. Didn't think anything about it, right? I put the song out and I went on tour, right? Cheap tour. We were only getting like $2,500 and we were losing money like crazy. But it was to promote the record. So we do one show, we do another show. Then we hit a place called McAllen, Texas. We hit McAllen, Texas, and there were helicopters over the venue. I'm like, okay, I'm wondering what's going on. Are they here to arrest somebody? But no, they were over the club. The club was so full, we had to add another show. But still, I didn't get the sense of it. Remember, this is before everybody had text messaging and there was no, you know, text message per se. It wasn't, no way of checking, no websites, no, couldn't get online, couldn't do anything. 1991, 92. Then we get to, I forget the place in, oh God, Panama City, Florida. I have this on video. Been on the tour bus for 2-3 weeks, maybe four, maybe almost a month. Hadn't really talked to anybody back home. Hadn't talked to anybody at the record label. And the club owner, I'm walking behind him with a camera. And he goes, and he's jokingly trying to talk like like he's introducing me. But we're walking backstage going to get something to eat. And he goes, and ladies and gentlemen, coming up next, the guy with the camera who just went number one today. And I look back at my assistant at the time and I ask her, I'm like, number one? She said, I don't know. I've been out here with you, right? And it literally, we hit Billboard's number one spot. And I looked next door and there's a hotel. I never will forget it. And the people were, and I got it on video, man. They're lined up on every patio of the hotel. And I'm like, what the hell happened? Who's here? I still had no idea that this was about that track just taking over the world. And it was. And stayed there for a pretty good while, too. So it was... It was a weird ride because it was like I was on a roller coaster and I didn't know it.
Now, does it go really fast or did time stop for you?
It went fast after it blew up, ironically. It's like it was slow. It was just a regular grind I was used to, except for we had tour buses instead of old vans, right? So that seemed to be going slow, but when it hit, all of a sudden... Mix, I need you to do this. Got to run out to LA. Got to run out. I mean, it was all over the place. Got to go into New York. Got to do this. Got to do that. And I really didn't understand how blessed I was because you just get so caught up in the work until, and I realize we'll probably get to this later, but until I'm sitting in a meeting in Beverly Hills with PolyGram, kind of a celebratory meeting, I thought. And then one of the ladies from PolyGram goes, so Mix, how's it feel to be banned from MTV. I'm like, what? What happened? So, you know, I'm kind of condensing the story, but, you know, this is when you think, you know, you can't fall from number one, right? And all of a sudden, they banned it, and I thought my career was over. And I remember Heidi from American, which is Rick Rubin's company, called and left. You know, that's back when you were hotshot if you had a cell phone.
Of course.
Oh yeah, I'm paying a buck a minute. I'm wealthy. So Heidi calls my cell phone and she goes, jokingly, she said, "Mix, you are now Elvis Presley and you shook your leg one too many times on the Ed Sullivan Show. Goodbye." And I'm like, what the hell did that just mean? I thought, wait a minute, I'm the forbidden fruit now. Which, you know, and every artist feels this. Once you go number one, there is no number zero. So you start looking down and you start wondering, man, how do I keep the credibility of this on the way down and not look like it's a meteoric drop? And that, I didn't realize it then, was a blessing.
Yeah, I mean,
then the record grew legs.
I mean, that's incredible. How did you not along the way blow up your life? I mean, how did you not complete? I mean, there were others that had fame and success and they lost everything. I mean, we're talking the bottom of the bottom, but you didn't. How did you not blow up your life?
You know, I think it was because I started on an independent label and we sold well over 2 million records on an independent. So I learned on an independent, I was still under someone, but the money was given to me and I had to manage it. So if I came home and a car got repossessed, you learn real quick, oh, we got to stop this. Now, that being said, I made so much doing Baby Got Back that I did hit that where I kind of went a little crazy and I had to pull myself back. I knew better. But it takes discipline. Don't listen to everybody that's yakking because they'll tell you, I got this investment. Oh, dude, all you got to do, 150 grand, I'll bring you back 2 million. You know, that kind of stuff. When you hear that kind of stuff and you look at this guy and he's driving a 68 Buick, you know, with a dent in the back, you kind of realize you would have done this already if that was real. So I've learned to say no, which is hard to do because some of the people you actually like, but you got to kind of manage it. And but I always wanted to take care of my guys. That's one thing. If anything, I overpay on the road. I don't believe in, I got, there's four of us when we go out now, and I don't believe in paying them $500 a week. I don't understand. They're giving up their life back home to come out, right? And let's face it, they got to love show business because the pay's not great. So what I do, the three guys I have now, I pay each of them a percentage of my gross.
Wow.
So it gives them incentive
to
work
on. Performance based. I mean, much like the way you operate. But that also speaks to your character. You're someone who believes that success is earned. You've got to be the first one in, last one to leave. That your rewards in life, it's going to be based upon what you put into it. So where did your work ethic come from?
My mom, number one. My dad also, but really my mom. My dad in the sense that he was the first black wingman at Boeing's. You know, I still got the picture. And he's sitting at the table with 11 white dudes. And he's just like, hey, accept me for who I am or I'll leave. You know, but my mom raised me by herself. And we lived in the projects every morning, religiously. She got up. She was a nurse at the King County Jail. And she'd get up, put her gun in her purse, because in that neighborhood, you had to have something on you when you went to the bus stop at 4 a.m, because most people were just going to sleep on the streets then. And she'd have her little .38. She'd walk across the street. I'd watch her every morning in the summer when I was home from school. And she did that every single day. So one day I'm thinking I'm helping her. This is when they had what we called food bank cheese. Right? Reagan was doing the whole food bank cheese thing. And somebody gave me a block of cheese. And I'm thinking I'm going to help mom. And she whipped my ass. She said, don't you ever take a handout from anybody. Period. And she stuck that in my head and I believe in work ethic. I start questioning myself, like, how come this is not happening? The first thing I examine is, have you put in the work lately? If you haven't put in the work, it ain't going to happen. So I've always had that. I believe you get what you put in. No. I always have.
No, absolutely.
And entertainers are the opposite. Most of them think that, you know, when they walk in a room, they deserve a free steak. You know, when you walk, I go into Ruth Chris and get a free steak, which has never happened. But if I go into Ruth Chris and I get a free steak, I'm probably going to tip the waiter $100. I mean, that's just how I look at it, because I don't believe you run around sucking off of people. When you fall, they let you.
Absolutely. Now, before you were a platinum artist, what was your first job? Like, what was the first thing you did?
let's see. My first job, there was a thing called the microfiche computer thing. And I worked at the Social Security Department and computers had just started, right? So I had to transfer all these. Oh my God. First of all, you got to check in like you're, you know, James Bond, right? Put your ID down. You got to leave your license at the front, you know, because you're dealing with people's life and their social security numbers and all that stuff. So I'm transferring all that. That was my first job. I hated it. Although I met a sexy girl there. That was, yeah. Anyway, that was we had a relationship that lasted about 2 months.
Look at you, Mix. I tell you what, you live quite the life. So where'd you go from there?
Job two was a place called Transport Equipment. I drove a forklift, turning over dumpsters from midnight to about 4 a.m. So that was job number two. And job number three was at an arcade, which started out, I was just handing out change. And I've always been to I got into electronics at 13, which is a whole other story. But once I took that job at the arcade, there were a couple of instances where some pinball machines broke. And I went inside of them and fixed them. So when I told my boss that I went inside of them and fixed them, he's like, "What do you mean you fixed them?" I said, "Well, it was just a bypass cap. I changed that out. No big deal. Wasn't one, a transformer went out. I changed that out." He said, "You've been knowing how to do this the whole time?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I pay my guy like four times what I pay you. So I'll pay you an hourly to work here, and then I'll pay you his rate if you have to do a repair." He said, "Just report the repair. Write down when you start, write down when you stop." You know, and I would write it down to the minute. He's like, "You're not rounding up to the hour." Most of my guys always lie and round up to the hour. You know, but I always believed that if he noticed that difference in me, he would probably take me to the next level if there was another level, which there wasn't.
But so
that's the way I've always been.
Yeah, it was earned. Now, it seems to be, though, from your side, that if you're going to get into something, you give it all you have. You don't go in halfway. You don't give 20%. That if you're going to choose something to be your career or the business you're in, that you need to become the best at it. So how did that start? And then what fuels you to go forward?
You know, success is very interesting. If it's meteoric, it's not real. And what I mean by that, I don't mean the money's not real. The money's real, but you won't do it again. Why? Because you think you deserved it. You don't think you earned it. That doesn't even enter into the mindset when you accidentally stumble on money. Example, most lottery winners go broke in 2 years. I mean, so now they give them the money over time, so it's a little easier because they get used to it. But there was something about, you know, at 13 years old, my mom gave me a pair of walkie-talkies. This is back, you know, they're talking the 70s, a walkie-talkie. That was high-tech back
then. Absolutely.
And I remember me and my buddy Kevin, we'd always mess with them, and something happened. One of them broke. So I went into it, and I called myself being a genius, didn't know what the hell I was looking at. I took it down to Radio Shack, which, for you youngsters, Radio Shack used to be kind of cool. Handy.
Yeah,
anyway, I went down, and the guy showed me, he said, "Well, look, here's the schematic." And I'm looking at it, I was like, "This is called a schematic. And see that little piece right there? That's called a capacitor. And it's in series, it's not bypassed the ground, which means that's probably your, he wouldn't fix it for me though. And he showed me how to fix it, and I fixed it, and it worked. I'm like, that feeling is addictive. And I didn't get into music to make money. I got into music for that very same feeling because I got into electronics, but it was getting boring, right? You're fixing some old guy's television set, stuff like that. Then I saw on a new channel called MTV, I saw Kraftwerk. And I thought I was the only artist influenced by Kraftwerk. I found out so is Timbaland, so is Dr. Dre, a whole bunch of people. But when I saw them playing music and not using traditional instruments, that's what I want to do. I knew it then. Although I couldn't afford it, I knew it then. And that's where the whole fire caught. But the work ethic, the delivering, and it works. There's something about that that was so pleasing. Even if there was no money involved, that didn't matter at that time. It was just I loved being able to put in work. I remember wanting to buy a drum machine, and my dad, same thing. Dad comes over, picks me up on Saturday, and we do our thing, and he brings me back on Sunday. I said, "Dad, I want to get these Nikes." Back then, Nikes were like $40. But I thought that was a fortune. So my dad's looking, we're at my grandmother's house, and he's looking across the street. He said, "Well, son, let me show you something. See that house right there? So yeah, he said, how old is that lady? I said, she's about 70. He said, what about the one next to her? She's about 70. What about the one next to her? Well, that's a couple. They're about 80. She said, yeah. He said, yeah, look at their lawn. Looks terrible.
Wow.
Oh, you're gone.
I got
there
you.
There you are. He said, look at their lawn. It looks terrible. I said, okay. He said, your grandmother has a push mower. You could probably knock out $20 a lawn. That's $80. You'll be able to buy two pair. That's where all that comes from. It was something about, I didn't want to be, I'm glad I'm not a trust fund baby because I feel sorry for him, to be honest with you. And I'm glad that I had to grind to get what I wanted.
Yeah, you worked hard to get here. Now, what are artists dealing with today? I mean, in this world of COVID, I mean, at one moment they're on the road, they go into packed stadiums, or they go into bars, or they go into, and now they can't do that. What sort of impact is, what are they feeling?
Yeah, that is a great question, because this goes to what we were just talking about. The artists who solely live on the road and packed stadiums are really stressing right now, I'm assuming. The artists who have studios, like I have a full studio. If I did a couple of, you know, kind of Zoom-based performances, and people are like, that sounds better than everybody else's. Because I'm running the whole mixer into the computer when I do them, you know, and I'm running, you know, I think I'm a camera genius. I went and bought a couple of Blackmagic 6Ks. I got all this stuff. So when I do stuff, I like to do it best I can. And I really talked to a bunch of artists who can't make money right now. They're stuck because one trick ponies. Me personally, I kept my publishing. I do a lot of licensing. We did a deal with Pepsi here recently, and we've done deals with, you know, Target and all kind of companies. I do a lot of licensing, and I use the fact that I have the studio, and I use my work ethic to close those deals. When we did the Pepsi deal, they wanted a new recording from scratch. Well, most artists can't get in the studio. Bam, I knocked it out. They didn't like something. Bam, I knocked it out again. 2 days later, I'm done. And the guy goes, this usually takes 6 weeks. And I said, why? He said, I have no idea. And I realized, okay, so I got to do this more because I'll get more work. And that's kind of what I'm always, my dad said, called the keeping your nose to the ground. I'm always smelling around to see where the weaknesses are in competition. Then I try to go after it.
I mean, yeah, you made a big investment into your studio. I mean, you didn't cut quarters. You prepared for the what if, or did you not really know what was going to happen? I mean, you put a big investment into it.
Yeah, I've had a studio in my house from day one. I've never recorded an album in a professional studio, ever. So I've had times where I went to a professional studio because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And my good friend Terry Date, who was the engineer then, taught me a lot about mixing. And of course, me being into electronics, I'm like, okay, write this down. Oh, tubes give you an odd harmonic. Transformers give you an even harmonic. I'm writing all this stuff down, and I'm just a kid. So my first record sounded horrible. I'm not going to lie. I didn't know what compression was, and you can tell. So it really sucked. Second record was better. Third record was the big one. And after that, the records kept sounding better and better and better because I've never, ever recorded in a professional studio. I've always done it from my home.
And so who teaches you how to use all the equipment, or are you teaching yourself?
Self-taught. So sometimes now I watch YouTube videos. I'm like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. And I go back and I try to do it. And I turned into a little bit of you may have to beat me out here, but a gear whore, which sounds fun, but actually it hinders creativity because I'm spending too much time learning, what's this knob do? What does that do? What does this plug-in do? And by the time I figure out what they do, I forgot the idea for the song. So I'm learning now to stop buying things that I don't have a need for and trying to manufacture a need in my head. And then I go out and spend 10 grand on a bunch of stuff I can't use, which I've done twice last month alone. So I don't.
You're finding all sorts of goodies. Now, you've got people around the world who are not at their best. Right now, they're at their worst. And many of them are about to give up on those dreams, give up on the thing that they've been fighting for. Do they quit right now? Like, what should they do?
In my opinion, the hardest thing to do, especially when you're an entertainer, especially if you come from the old business model, which I'd love to talk about in a minute, but a lot of times entertainers have been coddled But part of the coddling, part of what labels used to do is they would, I hate this word because everybody uses it, they would empower you. They would make you think you did it yourself because you never took the time to walk through the label and see the guy in the mailroom who's sending out stuff in your name, or meet the kids that are running the stuff on the internet for you, blowing up your Twitter page, blowing up your Instagram page while you smoke weed somewhere. And you actually think you worked your way up. And now, because of COVID, you got to work. And you don't know how to do it. It's not the artist's fault per se. Well, it kind of is, because they still could have learned while they were going. But everybody's not that inquisitive or curious or whatever you want to call it. But I think it's hard for an artist now, if they've never believed in bootstrap economics, it's hard for them to learn it now. Maybe a little bit late. But you better learn it now, because that is where we're at.
It's interesting because we always say that there's three types of people. There's the how group. Mix, how do I do it? There's the why group. Why are we doing it this way? And then occasionally people that were born on August 12th, like you and me, we're the I got it's that you'll figure it out. Google, YouTube, that you'll go out there and you'll find it, that it seems that in today's world that you've got to want it more, that you've got to want it more than anybody else wants it for you. So how do you reach in and find that?
Yeah, and first thing, find your niche. Realize who you are, and more important, realize who you are not. That's what I've been dealing with for the last year and a half. Was, you know, financially I'm doing okay. I'm not complaining at all. I got no problems. But I had a friend of mine going, dude, man, he came in my studio, saw me work. We did a song together. Young guy, right? He's in his 20s. He said, man, I wouldn't even know you had this. And I said, what do you mean you wouldn't even know? He said, well, if I hadn't showed up, I mean, based on what I see out of you on social media, you're just the butt guy. And I'm like, uh-oh. I knew right then, uh-oh, we have a problem. And I realized that socially, I wasn't really, because nowadays people want to know who you are. That was never the case before. You just kind of quietly did things and you did unassuming, and you know, the IRS kind of left you alone after a while. But now, if you're viewed as kind of a one-trick pony, that's how you get defined. And you have to define yourself. And that was my weakness. So I think that all of us have to do that, especially the older artists, because I came up at a time when, man, labels were just, they could spoil you and they make you feel like they loved you. And then they called shelving. They would shelf you and your whole career was over because you couldn't work anywhere else. They still had your contract. Your record just didn't come out. It just sat on a shelf somewhere. And that I said I wanted to get away from. So I did.
And contracts today, I mean, what do contracts look like for artists?
I'll say this, and there are exceptions like Adele, and she worked with Rick Rubin, knock on wood, love Rick Rubin. There's some exceptions. But why an artist signs a regular recording agreement nowadays is stupid. It makes no sense at all to me. Don't get me, and there are exceptions. I get that. I get like a super, super pop star. Totally get it. The average artist, why? What's the point? Why are you? Guess what? Guess the first thing the label's going to tell you to do. The first thing they're going to tell you to do, hey, we got to get your social media going. Hello, which means you're your own PR company. Why are they getting a massive cut of your revenue when all they're doing is turning your computer towards you and saying, get to work? I for the life of me, I don't understand. But I will say this. The differences between then and now are huge. Luckily, I came up with an independent, so I knew about the grind. But then, if you were fortunate enough to be picked up, you probably would make good money. But you were owned. You didn't know how much money you were generating. You just knew how much you received. And there were little tricks in some of those deals. The old days, you'd get this thing called independent promotion. Okay. What is independent promotion? So that means you run a record label. You're signing me, and you're telling me, look, I got my guys in New York and Philly. I got to put them to work, you know, so I'm going to give them 30 grand to work this record. Okay. So can I meet these guys? No, man. They run a company. They're over there. They're doing this. So how do I know how much you're spending on independent promotion? You just give me a line item on a statement. That's it. I have no idea if you really did it or not. That kind of stuff went on line after line after line after line in contracts. Some things you were not allowed to see and or know. Cleans. That's when they used to give away records free. How many cleans did you give away? You never know. They just give you some numbers and that's it. So nowadays, the only negative is you don't know business, which is a big negative. It might be the only one, but it's a big negative. And what I mean by that is that when you come up in the record business, you do learn about the business, although you get raped along the way sometimes. Now, I don't feel like I did, but it happens to a lot of people. But if you spend time and do some homework and understand the business, nowadays, you end up being Drake. I mean, Drake woke up one morning, I'm not exaggerating, he said on social media he was going to break TikTok. And the next morning, he broke TikTok. You can't do that on a record label because they have to plan the release. Right now, the model isn't put out a single, get everybody playing it on radio, and then drop the album. Now it's put out a single, everybody streams it, and while they're streaming it, add some more songs because they'll make you a channel and you make revenue on that whole stream. It's just a different model. You don't need an album cover. You don't need a list of credits. Although I like credits, me personally, but you don't need that stuff. You just throw out one single and it works. Throw out another one and another one and another one and another one. Even if they're flops, people will listen to them. And that's the new model. And I think that these kids get it. At the same time, they don't seem to get the other side of it. They don't seem to set up a system. They don't seem to want to learn that. Now, there are exceptions. Tech N9ne, dude is younger than me, but I look up to him.
Fantastic.
Oh, he was independent when it wasn't cool to be independent. And he still was making money. But now, I mean, I watched Tech N9ne put out a single by one of his artists. I check on him all the time. He's doing a video and he says, look, y'all, I'm putting out this blah, blah, blah. And, you know, let's make this like top out iTunes. I want to see how many actual sales I'm going to get. Boom. I was like, oh, my God. Tech N9ne, in my opinion, is probably one of the smartest guys in the business. Also, another one, Hobson. Hobson is probably the best rapper on the planet. He's definitely, if you listen to him, subject matter, skills, delivery, his videos look like movies. And he went to UCLA, if I'm not mistaken. So he has a bunch of grads probably playing with him, is getting it all done. But he has a little ecosystem around him, just he runs it beautifully, and he doesn't know me from Adam. But
so how do you do that? I mean, the people you've mentioned have found a way to develop loyalists, not mercenaries. They built loyalists. Right. How do you build a community?
I think what you do is you find specialists. It used to be I need somebody to be subservient. No, that's not what you want. You want to if right now you're doing a cool interview with me. I love it. Guess what I'm going to do? I launch a streaming radio station. I'm calling you. I'm not asking you to work for me. I'm saying, hey, dude, what would you charge me, you know, to do the same thing you're doing, but I want to promote a few things I'm dropping. Maybe I give you a cut of the profits, or maybe you just want to be paid a guaranteed amount of money. Whatever that is, I don't think it's employees anymore. I think this is business leverage. It's businesses leveraging things against and with one another. So you might want to dip into the market I'm into. You want to get your voice out there. I make money if you do it. You get the audience you want, which means you make money if you do it. But we're independent contractors. And I think that is where we're at now. And I don't think anybody's really taking time to kind of teach especially the young kids about, hey, you're a businessman or woman. even if you don't believe it. You actually are. Are you going to be a good one or a bad one?
I mean, people that say, I'm not in sales, I go, but you sell yourself every day. I mean, every friendship, every relationship you have, I had to imagine that there was something that you had that the other person said, I got to buy him or I got to buy her. So talk about now in terms of mentorships. I mean, there has to be a number of people that you mentor. What's that been like?
It's been interesting because I never saw myself as the mentor, right? I'm sitting here talking to people. I got one friend of mine. I'll leave his name out for now, but he was here one night and we were just, he was asking questions, but I didn't even notice that he was picking, right? And he was asking about recording vocals. He's pretty good engineer now, really solid dude. He was good, pretty good then, but he's really good now. He sucks in that information like a vacuum cleaner, right? So he asked me one question, asked me another question. I listened to a couple of his mixes. I said, yeah, dude, it was a rock band he was mixing. I said, dude, you can't mix rock like rap, bro. I said, your kick is murdering the bass. You can't hear the bass player at all, blah, blah, blah. So I was showing him how to do compression ducking. He wanted to see, I want to keep the bass warm. You know, I want to keep the kick dominant until the bass comes in. And I showed him how to do compression ducking where when the bass hits, the kick dips a little bit, right? That kind of stuff. And he's sucking up all this information. And then I heard him do another interview and say that I was his mentor. I'm like, when the hell did that happen? I didn't even realize. I'm like, we're just hanging out like friends. You know, it's pretty interesting. So, I have another young guy, young rap artist. I'm just kind of getting to know him. His name is TNT. I mean, and he's been around the block. I mean, he went to the Seattle Art Institute. I mean, he knows his stuff. He's done a few videos. He's done some songs and stuff like that. But there's that thing, that sparkle, that's not quite there. I don't mean, when I say sparkle, I don't mean, oh, you need to get your hairline. No, I don't believe in that stuff. That you can come out with boogers in your nose. If you got a good song, they'll buy it. It was just something on the production side that I think I can add. We've done a test track so far, but I'm asking him, who do you listen to? Because I think that when you deal with a kid that's younger than you, a lot younger than you, you give him a beat. Let's be honest, you're 17, right? And you meet some guy that's, you know, 40, he's been doing it for years, he's had platinums, and you don't like his beat. It's hard to say, yeah, I'll do it. You know, you know, say, yeah, that sucks, dude. So I that's why I asked him, I said, what are you listening to now? You know, he mentioned a couple tracks from Nipsey Hussle and some things like that. And everything he named, I wrote down. And then what I do is I'll listen to the songs he named a bunch of times. And I have this thing I do with my phone where I listen to a song, I listen to it. Then I mute most of the highs. Everything below 500 hertz is all I listen to. Why do? Because songs sound different when you do that. So you might hear a song that's going,
there we go.
Well, when you turn it down and you mute those highs, it's just going. And when it does that, you can create something totally unique, change the tempos and stuff like that. But I do that a lot. And now I'm going to be able to give him, I think, what he feels, as opposed to him just going, well, you know, the guy's producing me for free, you know? So, yeah, little stuff like that, man.
Well, I got to tell you what, respect is earned. You earn my respect today. So how can we learn more about you, Mix?
Oh, man, you can check me out on Instagram. I do some talking, but obviously there's only so much talking you can do. But I've been doing a lot of videos. I just did a video on YouTube about recording and telling kids that, oh, there's a guy running around the internet. He's good, though. He's funny. He's like 60. And he's just dogging trap music and, oh, that this cicada hi-hats. He hates that. And it's like, dude, you're still playing Peter Frampton records. Peter Frampton was great, but was is the key word, right? So I did a video kind of responding to that in a wink, wink, nod, nod kind of way and letting kids know. No, not only am I going to do that, I'm going to do a lot of that. Telling kids how they can record records cheaply, $500 and under, and track a whole album. It can be done nowadays. It takes a little work, a little creativity, a lot of in-the-box work, but that's what I'm doing. Also, I'm starting a Twitch channel, so I got the name and everything locked, and what I'm doing, I'm gonna play with an affiliate, Rode Nation. Rode Nation is going to bring me on to Twitch. We're going to talk about some stuff, and get a rhythm going, get some fans going, then I'm gonna spill off and do my own thing.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, you've got to come back. I want to hear more of your story. Thank you so much for joining us on the Bitcoin.com podcast.
Right on. Next time I talk to you, I need a Bitcoin education too, man.
You've listened to another episode of the Bitcoin.com podcast. Subscribe at news.bitcoin.com, where your journey begins.